March 17th, St. Patrick's Day meeting to order at, I'd like to say 6, but I can't. It's 6:03.
Oh, well.
We will establish a quorum at this time. So please voice the roll call, starting on my immediate left.
Commissioner Virginia Klassen, present.
Commissioner John Thomas, present.
Commissioner Gloria Fleming, present.
Commissioner Linda Mayfield, present.
All are present. Quorum has been established. I will say and lead the Pledge of Allegiance. Please follow with me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Please follow along with your agenda. Anyone who didn't have one, there's some right outside on that little stand out there. Number four is added agenda items. We will discuss these on the other matters portion. Number five.
Do we have any added agenda?
Oh, I didn't think we did, but we might. Does anyone have any added agenda items?
I don't.
No.
Okay.
I don't either. Thank you for reminding me. Trying to go a little too brief. Number five, approval of February 17th, Planning Commission meeting minutes.
I only have one correction, and that was just a spelling error on page 3. Okay. I think it's three. Barbara Ann Dodson Nelson. It just says spelled wrong.
Barbara Ann.
Wait, she spells it.
Is that right?
When the mayor called one to my attention, I think that was I had counselors instead of commissioners.
Page 2.
Page 2.
And then I'm getting all confused because now I'm a counselor or a commissioner. The rest of us don't have that.
It really stood up to me.
And a big deal. I'd like to move that we approve the minutes as corrected.
I second it.
On the question? No. All those in favor signify by the sign of aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The ayes have it. So ordered. Number six, update on the February 25th meeting of the Deschutes County Planning Commission regarding the City of Alpine's comprehensive plan. I'll introduce now Deborah McMahon and James Lewis, and congratulations to you both.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We certainly appreciate it.
Working with all of you again.
As you're aware, what Alpine is doing is creating its comprehensive plan, the text for setting out the policies that will drive the implementation ordinances. And as part of that, the city limits has been determined to be the urban growth boundary, or the UGB. That's important to the county because in their own comprehensive plan, they need to recognize what Lapine's doing. And so the county meeting is set to establish what changes have to occur in their plan to recognize that Lapine has its own comp plan and it has its own UGB. And that's what was accomplished at the county meeting. What will happen next is they will forward their findings, just like we forward our findings, to the Board of County Commissioners for final approval. And then it goes to the state. As part of the grant, there's a packaging process for all the work that's been done. Mm-hmm. And it's not a matter of just taking the comp plan and sending it into the state. We have to attach all the support documents, which really are about 4 feet tall, of materials. And we have to make sure that the comprehensive plan is submitted with additional findings that address Oregon Administrative Rules Division 3. So this is a situation where a new city is creating its first comprehensive plan, and there are special rules on how you submit the package to the state. It is bureaucracy times 20. And we're happy to do it, but it's extremely detailed and complex and horribly boring. But to make it simple for you, it's just the packaging that goes to the state. And when the state looks at that, they're going to check off all the boxes to make sure we've done everything correctly. There's always a potential, and this is common when you do these things for the first time, they may ask for a certain revision. Because just like you reviewing an application that comes through for a site plan, they're reviewing the comp plan, and they might say on page 29, we'd like you to correct this. That's normal. When we did the comprehensive plan for Prineville, we got a little note back saying on page 29, we'd like you to do this. So don't be surprised if the state says there are some final corrections. But we had a great relationship with the state all through the process. We talked to them weekly. So hopefully any corrections will be minimal.
I think it helps them justify what they do every day.
Yeah.
Classical inspector. You have to come up with something.
Exactly.
So I give them one real major thing. That way they won't notice all the minor
stuff. And there's just one person at DLCD who is very sensitive to urban growth boundaries. Unfortunately, Bend has tainted the situation for us, so there's more scrutiny. But we have excellent findings about why the city limits is appropriate to be a UTB. So I think that makes sense. And if they want more findings or changes to support that in a more complete fashion, according to them, that would be fine. But we really don't know what they're going to say, because so far we've had nothing but positive reports.
Jumping in, one of the things on the county end of things is they, as Deborah alluded to, there was a planning commission hearing. Commissioner Fleming was there. It was short and sweet because they're not really commenting on the Lapine comprehensive plan. They're commenting on their own comprehensive plan and changes which recognize that you now have your own document and your own map and your own urban growth boundary. April 5th at the Board of County Commissioners meeting is a public hearing on those changes to the county comprehensive plan that were recommended to be forward from their planning commission, same way that all of you recommended the comp plan to the council, and the council had a hearing and adopted it. They're at the stage where it's gone from the planning commission to the Board of Commissioners, and that will be April 5th.
That's in Bend, right?
Okay. Correct. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, their administration building there. Mm-hmm. And again, what they will do is they will more than likely acknowledge that the Lapine City Council has adopted a comprehensive plan that it's going to be sent to the state, but they're not really approving it in any way, shape, or form. Is approved locally, but they will be acknowledging that in their own comprehensive plan as part of their changes. Mm-hmm. And that then should be it, other than forwarding the stuff to the state.
That should complete the local process.
Good.
It's a big sigh of relief.
Yeah,
isn't it?
I mean, you know, do you see anything in there that you think the state would possibly have a problem with?
It's not that they'll have a problem with it. They may have, because of the scrutiny on Bend, because they've been, quote, really examining to the nth degree what Bend's doing, they may say, look, we need Bend, add some findings about this. We may have Lapine do the same thing so that they're consistent. Bend is under the grill right now.
I know.
And it's we're gonna feel a little bit of that. Mm-hmm. But we've had no appeals. We've had no problems with our local DLCD rep. We've been coordinating with the county and all the agencies that are in this area, as well as state and federal. So if anybody had a problem, they would have brought it up by now. Mm-hmm.
And we've had drafts of this document and the findings in the past, months ago, and so we've had initial comments and addressed those in the document and in the findings. Mm-hmm. Typically, it's they won't say that you did something wrong. What they will say is, we don't think that you've justified or explained enough how you came to this conclusion. Yeah. And a lot of times it would be, well, you know, this direction of the community, or sometimes it's on technical number of acres needed, things like that. I mean, one issue they commented on is, why is the urban growth boundary as large as it is if it goes beyond the 20-year land supply? Well, it's because it would be atypical, I think, of any other community in Oregon to make your urban growth boundary smaller than the city limits.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it has a matter of practicality that sometimes you have to just explain it and bring them along with
you.
And it's good to explain why that's important. If you had your UGB smaller than your city limits, who do you represent? You've got citizens that live outside the UGB who would be under the control of the county, and people inside the city, and it's confusing.
Mm-hmm.
So for taxpayers, you really ought to have a jurisdiction that matches that taxpayer boundary.
Well, it might just be just spending the time to get them up to date on what has happened in Lapine that they haven't paid attention to so far.
Yeah.
So, you know, that way you might have to educate them a little bit.
Yeah. And, you know, on that note, you mentioned Bend, and this goes to DLCD, which is the department and the staff. Tomorrow, in Bend, at their police station, that there is where they have a big hearing room, meeting room in there, is the Land Conservation and Development Commission, which oversees the department, such as the city council or the board of county commissioners, is having the regular meeting. They hold them around the state. But on that agenda is a public hearing on the appeal that Bend submitted on their urban growth boundary report that they got from their department staff.
Mm.
And so, you know, if you wanted to go, it's one of many things on there that's going to, you know, the meeting is tomorrow and then carries into Friday for what they don't finish.
Hmm.
It's not the most exciting, but you see how this work goes to the department.
That's a state meeting then.
Correct. Reigning board that has jurisdiction over all land use matters in the state, aside from the legislature, which adopts it.
All right.
So.
Yeah. So what do we have before us here? This administrative review and decision? City of Bend, is this a...
We've been talking about a little training in the past, and one of the things that we wanted to do is go over a format that's recent, that gives you a good perspective of how you as planning commissioners would review an application.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the county isn't getting much for Lapine, the economy, everything else. So we didn't want to say no training until you get something in. That could be months. So let's start with something fresh.
Mm-hmm.
This is an application for one of my clients that needed to reestablish an approval for a subdivision that had lapsed, and so they had to go back through the process. And so this is a nice, clean review. And what I'd like to do is start on page one and give you an idea of what these things look like. This is the city staff in Bend's review of this application. And we've got plenty of copies here if you want to look at them as a sample. In fact, let me put this down here so that you guys can see what I'm talking about. And there's plenty here if you're interested. Got it. It's a sample. And let me get you one, Vicki.
Okay, thanks.
Sure.
Can you see this one?
Yes. Yeah. Please. Can you all see? You need to slip another one down? Okay. So in this particular case, we've got the perimeter of the project. And the Bend Metro Parks District wanted a new park as well. So not only was it a reestablishment of a previous approval, it was a modification to add the park. So it's a residential subdivision, and the kind of criteria that are used to evaluate this request are going to be listed on the front page. And when you get a county application, it'll look very similar. So what does the city staff do? They're required to evaluate the proposal based on the criteria that are the legal rules for whatever city you're in. And in this case, those are the standards. And the city staff has talked about the basics of the proposal. And then the most important thing is the procedural requirements of, was there proper notice? Did the neighbors have a chance to comment? Did agencies and city staff from different departments like engineering and building and police, did they get a chance to comment, and what were those comments? So the city staff report evaluates those things too.
Can I jump in real quick?
Of course.
It builds on something we talked about 2 months ago, or meeting 2 meetings ago where I did the training with you, is these criteria that Deborah are referring to, those are the review criteria, those are the only criteria that are applicable to this review. If you remember when I was telling you about the applicant's responsibility to prove that they meet those criteria, aside from that drawing, there were other materials that Deborah had to submit for this project, and she had to address all of those criteria and prove on behalf of this project and her client, how and why those criteria were met. So think back, they're looking at a thick application packet, which is the stuff we talked about that would be forwarded to you, and it would be your responsibility then to take that, just like the staff did, look at all these applicable criteria and determine, have they met the criteria or not, based upon the materials that have been submitted to the file.
And I'm curious, okay, you're saying this is a renewal. On an application, is there a standard timeline
yes.
that once they have an application? Is that something that you establish?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, each city is a little different.
So then when that expires, they have to go through the whole process again?
Yes, and there's a good reason for that. One, the rules may have changed, the community may have changed, circumstances may have changed, and so it's important at certain times when people let things lapse to go back through the entire process to make sure all the criteria have been met, especially if your zoning ordinance has changed. In this case, it had changed, and it had changed with regard to compatibility with adjacent properties. The standards became more stringent. So for me, representing my client, I had to go through additional analysis to make sure that all of the new criteria had been met as well.
But so that negated the original application?
Yes, yeah.
That's, you know.
Had any groundwork been done, any utilities, road work?
Yeah.
Yes.
Phase one had been completed, all the utilities put in, and you can see that this is phase one up here. They put in all the roads, they've done all the off-site improvements. And what the county's going to do when they submit a packet to you is they're going to have evaluated the information, just like the staff did here in this staff report. So you're going to have some guidelines to follow to see how the county staff evaluated each criterion. Same way the city of Bend did. So when you see in bold different things, required findings for land division approval, you've got to make sure in this kind of application for a residential that, one, did you subdivide it properly? Not only to meet city law, but state law, because the state surveyor and the state requires certain things to be done when you carve up land. So that's one level that has to be reviewed. And the county staff's going to make it easy for you because they're going to list out everything, and then you'll see how they evaluated it. Can you do anything more than what the criteria give you the range to evaluate on? And the answer is yes, sometimes, but most of the time you've got to stick to the criteria. For example, if somebody said, well, you know, a person came forward and said, I don't like that house because it's going to be painted blue and I want it to be painted green. Mm-hmm. That's not a criterion. So you have to gently get through that and say, look, citizen X, whoever that is, here are the criteria, here's what we're required to evaluate on. Can you look at subjective criteria and add things to make the project better? The answer is yes. If the criteria is open, meaning it's subjective and it's not clear and objective, it's different, you will have the ability to make things better. For example, if the criterion was streets have to go to and through, and yet there was topography here that prevented it, and it wasn't reasonable to cut through a mountain of rock, you would have the ability to say, no, we're going to do a cul-de-sac here because that's the more appropriate way to deal with it. Is it inappropriate to cut through rock or cut through a neighborhood to connect this street? Yes, that's inappropriate. So subjective criteria gives you the ability to refine the project, but you have to be very careful how you do that. Each case is different.
On the existing, just on this particular one here, on that existing work that was done, did the city make them change any of that existing work that they had spent money to put in?
Not on the stuff that was already put in, but the requirements to meet certain things on the reapplication are going to be different. For example, since phase two is one lot, and it's meant for the Parks District to have as its new plat.
That wasn't on the original plat?
Wasn't on the original plat.
Okay. And the city, upon review of this, or this new, then they changed it to have a park in there, right?
Yeah, and you'll see, I'll show you on page, hang on, we'll get to the conditions. Actually, hang on just a second. Let me give you a better example. If you look on page 17, number 4, there's a requirement for a fence to be built between the property and the adjacent properties. Mm-hmm. That was a condition that did not exist before. Mm. And it's a subjective result because it helps compatibility between these large lots and these smaller lots that are being proposed. Mm-hmm. So that's an example of where things have changed. That's fine. The developer said, you know, that's reasonable. We can do that. Didn't fight it. The other thing is, in the creation of the park lot, okay, it's a big flag lot. What do you do with water and sewer? So the city said, well, wait a minute. That's not going to develop for a while. It's not really like a residential lot. So they created a condition that requires, let's see, there is a condition, hang on, oh, condition number 8 says in the middle, you've got to put in all the utilities and you've got to show plans how those are going to be built. And you have to sign a public facilities improvement agreement, pay fees, etc. You can't have final plat approval until you've got all those utilities in the ground. But in lieu of construction of public improvements, the applicant may enter into an improvement agreement with the City of Bend Engineering Division. So they're helping the applicant for this unusual situation by creating a condition that specifically says, you know, you're not going to put in all these facilities for the park because it's not timely, so we're going to have you sign a special agreement. Mm-hmm. And so these are the kinds of conditions that help refine the application to make it really acceptable for the entire community. Mm-hmm. And what you'll see in these conditions of approval are the kinds of things that would come through on a county application.
For a developer that goes in, buys flats with the intent of doing this and this and this, and then these kind of changes, wouldn't that affect their ability to develop? Or, I mean, financially, that would impact them tremendously. I mean,
they basically lost all these lots as far as development.
Mm-hmm. They lost 36 lots.
Right. So
but the park district's paying them money for that land, too.
Okay, that was my question. Are they? Is there any way that they would be compensated for changes?
Yes.
So
yes. In this case, there was a purchase and sale agreement that initiated the modification to include the park. So the developers, in essence, made whole, but still has to agree to all these conditions because it's part of the application.
Mm-hmm. But the developer was basically working with?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just have a question. Mm-hmm. Because it says, for example, that the sidewalks, etc., must be completed prior public improvements shall be before construction begins, for example. Now, what happens when, for example, they put in sidewalks and they are not up to performance standards, meaning they start falling apart?
There's two things.
How does that work?
Because
then it becomes, it's like you think, okay, it's a sidewalk, but does the city then become responsible for that sidewalk upkeep?
Eventually. But there's kind of a warranty period, just mm-hmm. like when you buy an appliance. Mm-hmm. So the developer's required to put in a sidewalk. Mm-hmm. It has to meet a certain city standard, which is developed, and
it would be county standard.
Yep.
And then you're required as a developer to hold a bond to make sure the work stands up for 12 months or longer. At the 12-month period, the city or the county comes out and says, sidewalk looks fine, it's built properly, we'll release the bond, and then we'll accept ownership of that facility. If there's something wrong with it, the bond is not released, and developers have to pay a premium on that every year. So they have an incentive to get it done right.
Because I'm concerned because in our neighborhood that has happened, and mm-hmm. I don't know that what has become of that. I don't, I mean, it's not really my neighborhood, it's like across the street, but it was development that basically has failed.
After that warranty period, you know, the developer's off the hook. You can, it's just like when you
so nobody complained in time?
Well, what essentially would happen is the city or the county should come out and they should, at the end of that warranty period of that 1 year, they do a review of the infrastructure that they approved a year previously that was paid for by the developer and constructed by the developer's contractor and bonded. You know, if there are no problems, and the same goes for like cracks in streets, breaks the water lines, sewer lines, any infrastructure that's going to become the city's responsibility, they do an inspection. If they say, hey, it's okay, then the bond is released and the developer is done at that point. If something happens a month later, it becomes the city's responsibility. It just
well, I'm concerned that some of these things were approved by the county and that the city's going to be responsible.
You will. That's the end result. Is so that the city will absorb them at some point in time.
And then there become policies. Frankly, when I was telling a story about when I tripped and fell and it was over a frost heave in the sidewalk where cracks in the sidewalk. But it was in a section of town, you know, the sidewalks had been put in probably 60 years ago. So there's a point at which then, from a city standpoint, like it's maintenance on any other road or facility, how and when do they prioritize that to fix those things? But you're correct. When it becomes like something doesn't happen...
So, for example, the sidewalks are basically turning into rubble.
Dust.
On top.
Different cities do it different ways. For example, in Bend, which I'm very familiar with, is that those sidewalks actually are the responsibility of the homeowner. Because oftentimes homeowners will go out and they will throw salt or
this
some other on the, you know, it could be bad concrete.
It
could be dirt.
I watched them mix it themselves.
And sometimes that's the problem.
Could be too much oxygen.
But you bring up an important point. The city of Lapine has a lot of streets that they don't own. They're county streets. And the city streets are a smaller portion of the total. The city council at some point in time will have to analyze the cost of maintaining the county streets within the city limits and determine when it makes sense to bring in some of those streets under city ownership. And there are good reasons for that. As you urbanize as a community, the streets are important features of everything that's linked up for a connection. So at some point you'll want control of those streets, but the council will have to make a decision. Don will have to make a decision whether it's financially feasible to absorb those into the city maintenance system. Those things will come later. So for now, when you get an application from the county, you'll get something that will have the proposal, some support documentation to show why it meets the county's codes, analysis from the staff on why it meets the county's codes, and then a final approval, which will look a lot like this. So what we wanted to do today is give you a clean example of one that's occurred recently in Bend, because you may get the same situation in Lapine and the county is going to be reviewing it. Your responsibility is to make sure they did it right, make sure it fits within the community, and refine it if necessary by sending back comments to the county so that they can prepare their final report. And we'll help you walk through that, because you don't have a staff to do that right now. So, you know, we'll have to take it a step at a time.
When you get a new application, it'll be really good, because we'll be able to take these criteria that are listed in here that come out of the code language you're going to be looking at as you... It'll be good, because you'll be working on developing new code language as well. And take the materials in the application and say, do you think that it meets that criterion or not? And because Deborah did a very good job here, you'll see in some of the findings under the criteria, it'll say the applicant has indicated that they are going to do, however, it will be a condition of approval. A lot of the conditions of approval that you see in here are cookie cutter, what we call cookie cutter conditions. For example, there's one of them that I look at page 5, it's E, construction, and it's talking about trees, preservation of trees. It says that during construction grading operation, you shall preserve trees. And then the finding says the applicant has indicated that he intends to preserve as many trees, and there's probably information in the file that's more detailed than what they say here. However, as a condition of approval, before you do any construction, we want you to put a fence around the base of each tree that needs to be protected to make sure no graders, doesn't get compacted. That's a kind of a simple cookie cutter type of condition. that you see in a lot of decisions.
Absolutely. And for Lapine, we heard from the citizens that preserving the natural landscape was important. So when we begin to craft the zoning ordinance, you may want a condition very similar to this that drives the developer to be sensitive to trees. One, identify where they are. Two, which ones need to be maintained and how many need to be maintained. Those things will come out in the zoning ordinance work that we're going to do. And there's a balance. You know, if there's a stand of trees in a corner of a property, it may be important to tell the developer, you got to save those, but you may have to wipe out the trees where the roads go because that's more important to the community. Mm-hmm. And we'll have to craft code to make sure that that's clear for anybody developing in Lapine. So this kind of example can be useful when we're thinking about the subdivision code, how you carve up the land, but also what livability standards do you want to employ so that whatever is developed in Lapine looks good. It's just not a template that could be used in any other city. It's specifically designed for Lapine's needs.
Yeah.
So that'll be the fun part.
Well, and one other thing is, as you read through this, I'll tell you to encourage you to read through it, read the criteria. Another thing, because it relates back to writing the code, is there are standards and there are the discretionary criteria. If you remember the standards, these are very straightforward. Mm-hmm. When you submit your application, I could look at that and I could go through these criteria and I could tell right away there are a lot of yes and no questions. Mm-hmm. Are the streets laid out, are the plots laid out at right angles to the street? Mm-hmm. Or are they some funky, crooked lot lines? As opposed to when you look at site plan and conditional use permit applications, I used this example before, is that you'll see in some code, it will ask, is the development harmonious with surrounding development? Well, to you it might be, to you it maybe is, might not, and those are the things that as we work through this, you won't see that in a lot of subdivision code. Those are the things to think about that you'll see in other decisions as we work through the code development.
Mm-hmm. Other things to be mindful of? When citizens look at the work you do, is it clear? When people in the audience see how you're evaluating applications, are they seeing that, one, you're looking at the criteria, and you're making solid, clear, and objective standards when they're needed, and then the subjective ones make sense? So it's important to not only evaluate, but it's important to tell the developer what they have to submit. Mm-hmm. And the new code will be very clear so that nothing can be blamed on the city that you're impeding economic development or creating obstacles. Mm-hmm. You want developers to be able to come in and know exactly what the rules are, mm-hmm. not be confused by anything, not get five different answers. Mm-hmm. And a lot of cities that we've worked for have experienced problems with old codes where information conflicts from one page to another. Mm-hmm. That costs the community lots of money because it's money for you, it's money for your staff to try to rectify that. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to make sure that you don't have that from day one. Mm-hmm. That's really important.
I think it's important to have common sense too. Yep. Mm-hmm. You know, so that when people look at it, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know.
Other things that will come up as you do the review, and again, Deborah mentioned, and we said that these are the applicable criteria. Those are the only applicable criteria to this mm-hmm. application as per the code.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I think through plans that I've reviewed before, in the past, countless subdivisions, is sometimes you will get people that will comment, public's allowed to comment, and say, I don't want a certain architectural style developed in this subdivision. I don't want any more craftsman-style homes in this community. And I want you to put a condition of approval or prohibit the developer or the builders from doing that. Not part of the criteria. Hmm. So therefore, as staff, I have to look at that person and say, you know what, personally, I might not like craftsman homes anymore either, but they're not part of the criteria. I cannot count that in my review. Those are things that will start to come up to you, and also maybe in your own mind as you're going through as the planning commission responsible for administering the code, you may have your own thoughts like that. I have things that I think about certain developments when mm-hmm. I review them. I'm like, man, I really don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's not part of my criteria, I cannot impose my own will.
Now, like in Sisters, they've kind of gone with a certain style. Mm-hmm. We haven't developed that here. I mean, we haven't worked on that at all. But I would hope,
one of my things, I would like to see a lot of public involvement as to what do you want Lapine to look like, you know. And, but, I mean, so do those go into criteria once that is established?
Yeah. We had this discussion at our second public meeting, and mm-hmm. that will be a point of good discussion during
that. Yeah. Design is a critical feature. For example, if you had Walmart come into Lapine, and they just, Walmart has prototypes, right. You know, A through Z. Mm-hmm. A lot of times they try to get A approved because it's cheap. Mm-hmm. And it'll be four walls and a box. But, you know, option Z is something that blends in with the community, and that's what you want to strive for. You can ask for those kinds of things.
Okay.
As long as you have design review sections that give you that authority. The other thing I want to mention is that when it comes down to economic development, the more burdens you place on the developer only results in a higher land cost. Mm-hmm. And it can have a ripple effect.
Right.
In Bend, so many conditions are placed on the development that the land value skyrockets. And it causes a false market. Mm-hmm. So Lapine has to be very sensitive to whether you want so many conditions that you start prohibiting development, or do you want it loosey-goosey where anything goes, or something in the middle just right? So, you know, you kind of want to be in the middle, but because of the economic crisis, we have to be very sensitive to obstacles and realize that the zoning ordinance grows over time. You can refine it. Every meeting you can propose refinements.
Right.
So, you know, I don't want you to think that a one shot and you'll be done forever. Consider the economy, consider what obstacles are appropriate, and then we can move forward, but still looking at that community values that we identified in the comp plan. So it all kind of goes together, but be real sensitive to the economic fallout of what you impose.
And ways to do that are on design, such as in Sisters, is they talk about it has to be a Western theme, and they give examples of what a Western theme is, which is a false front, you know, we have the roof behind the taller front, and they give certain architectural features. And they say the inclusion of those features in the design will constitute a Western theme. And maybe they want one or two or three of those features. Mm-hmm. But they're not so specific to say it has to be X, Y, and Z, because that's where you get into the cost.
Right.
When you allow that architectural freedom, and then you create Disneyland in your community, which you really don't want.
Yeah.
You
know, exactly.
You allow architectural freedom. Different buildings need to be different sizes and shapes for different uses, mm-hmm. and you give that freedom so somebody can develop something, meet their costs, but still meet what you're trying to do as a community.
Yeah, like in Sisters, when you go to you know, one of the Western storefronts and you go to a restroom inside the building, you know, it's not an outhouse out back, first of all, which would be a total Western. But then, you know, and it doesn't have big pine planks that are out of level with nails sticking up either. You actually have, you know, tile and such. So, you know, you can go crazy with that theme thing. Lapine does need to develop a theme, but I think we could prohibit development in this town if we, especially we're just now starting out, you know, so we have to really take little baby steps here, mm-hmm. and not.
Let me give you an example that will pop up because the billboard companies are constantly monitoring what we're doing, and we got calls, and we talked about this a little bit. You're a tourist community. You have a responsibility to people who come up and down the highway to find things, to look for things. Billboards serve a purpose, but they don't have to be ugly.
Mm-hmm.
You can impose standards where you don't want any more billboards, done, no more in the community. Or you can turn them into very well-designed kiosks that provide community service, community information, emergency phones, and the billboard companies will build those because they need to advertise. But if you guys get places where there's emergency phones and tourist information and there's a map on the backside that shows where things are in Lapine and the adjacent features around Lapine, you get two bangs for your buck because you're getting money from the billboard companies, but they're building it the way you want it to be done. So you're not banning them. You're making them work for the community. And that's a good thing because I'll give you an example. In Prineville, we took the position because the billboard companies were so, they were pressuring the city so hard, we just banned them. We said, that's it. We're not going to let them in. And today there are no more billboards in Prineville than there were 10 years ago because we put a stop to that. We repealed the ability to have billboards in the town. But does it serve the purpose for the community, the traveling public? Probably not. So the balance wasn't achieved. Mm-hmm. Only one thing was achieved, which was the ban. For Lapine, I think your responsibility as a tourist community responding to the traveling public is mm-hmm. part of your system.
Right.
You got to think about it differently.
Yeah, to ban a Walmart, you know, we have a lot of tourists coming through, and where do tourists like to shop?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they want to stop at their Walmart. So to say, well, we're going to appeal to tourism, so we're not going to have a Walmart, is cutting your hand off. You know, and you mentioned a Walmart, like in South Bend, you know, design A, cheapest, ugliest building to Z. Look at South Bend Walmart. You know, it'd be closer to the A. And then look at Redmond Walmart, and it's closer to the Z. Well, now, but to me, you know, I'm an old builder, to me, there's really not much difference from A to Z. It's still a very huge square building. And so you can put some nice little fronts on there and all that. To me, it still needs to fit in a particular place in town.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, the location is a lot more important than the design. So, you know, that's something that you can hide bad designs sometimes,
mm-hmm.
you know, a couple streets over.
Yeah.
And then you can bring to the forefront other designs. So location is very important also.
One thing they do in Connecticut, which is amazing, and they've been very successful with it, is they focus on vegetation more than anything else. Of course, they have a different
mm-hmm.
climate.
Mm-hmm.
But with proper signage and proper direction, a building can be set back. There can be intense vegetation in front, which helps balance it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the human eyes only go so far. And for example, when you walk downtown Portland or downtown San Francisco, you're not looking up at the top of the building because you can't.
Mm-hmm.
So the visual field is something where yeah. the heavier regulation should go.
Good point. I'd like to draw your attention too to Bi-Mart parking lot right now. They've left a little strip of trees and sagebrush and stuff in the front of Bi-Mart. Mm-hmm. Okay, perfect opportunity to have a beautifully landscaped frontal area.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's just too natural for me.
Yeah, it's all the weeds.
The sagebrush attracts
yeah.
the garbage. I mean, it's just like a magnet and
yeah.
just collects the garbage in.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you had a nice plan there with the trees and the vegetation. However, the follow up, and that's
mm-hmm.
that's where I see a lot of things with developments go wrong. Is that they first put them in, and you put a green tree in a pot just to satisfy, you know, the city's mm-hmm. requirement, and then 6 months later it's dead, and then a year later you can't hardly even recognize
yeah.
this development because it is such a shambles after mm-hmm. the developer's gone.
And that's what you will see in when I talk about a site plan review application. That would be a site plan review decision, and based upon a plan, different set of criteria than what you have here, and you will see conditions of approval. Sometimes that are written that says prior to issuance of building permits and construction, the developer has to do A, B, and C.
Mm-hmm.
During construction, they have to do
mm-hmm.
you know, LMNO.
Mm-hmm.
And post construction and moving into the building,
mm-hmm.
what you will see oftentimes is continue to keep up the landscaping per the approved landscaping plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though the landscaping evolves, things grow, you need to trim them, trees die.
Sure.
But then that becomes, and this was a discussion that we had with some of the counselors last year, a year ago, was code enforcement with the county. And as transition occurs between the county and city administration of its own codes, that's going to mm-hmm. be an item that the council will have to look at, who does the code enforcement.
And you should hold firm on landscaping. That's
yes,
an important feature. You can have a series of bonds. It doesn't have to be one, which is hard for the developers to get. It can be a phased bond. For example, we're going to release the majority of the bond, but we're going to keep enough to make sure that plants last for 2 years. That's not hard for developers to deal with because the premium on that bond is fairly small. But you really need to have something that encourages the developer to stay on track and reduces the need for you guys to go out there every week to do code enforcement, because that's expensive staff time you don't have.
I was going to say, doesn't weed abatement and code enforcement, doesn't that take care of some of those things too down the road? Mm-hmm. I mean, even though their bond may be gone, if you have weed abatement ordinances, then they would still have to adhere to them because they work in the city.
And aside from that, as long as they are operating under the plan, the business that was approved for that, and site plan that was approved for that property, it could be 20 years down the road. And if that condition of approval that says maintain the landscaping post moving into the building, that decision, that approval runs with the land. Mm-hmm. And so it's in perpetuity. Mm-hmm. So if it was something that was approved 15 years ago, 1995, mm-hmm. you can go out there and say you are in violation of your land use approval.
And we may want to do some creative things. Part of the grant includes a mitigation ordinance, impact mitigation. What is the developer's impact on the city system? And when I say city system, that includes the districts and everyone else that provides service. We think of it globally. So for an application like this, X number of lots have an impact on street, water, and sewer. Is it enough to pay an SDC? Should there be a commitment to other off-site improvements because the impacts to the community are great enough where you have to analyze something beyond the borders of this subdivision? That will come up. And so there will be a practical way for you to evaluate that so that, one, maybe developers have to pay into a local district plan that makes upkeep for a certain drainage area. Or maybe they have to pay into a system that helps improve pedestrian connections through a certain neighborhood. You know, I'm making this stuff up to give you examples, but one of the things that we'll do in that mitigation ordinance is make it clear so that when developers come to your area, when I say developers, not just homes, it's business, employment, and industry, they know what they might have to pay. Because without that information, they can't get a loan.
And some of the, an example, a tactic is that for ongoing things like landscaping, you can put in your ordinance, you can require that the conditions of approval, those things that are ongoing, be recorded against the property. Mm-hmm. So that if Bi-Mart moves out and you get a Kraft and Floral moves in, they're the same use, it's a retail sales. When that company comes to buy that property and they get a title report, they see that recorded against the property, they can't plead ignorance that they didn't know what they needed to maintain the landscaping. Mm-hmm. See, so there's all kinds of little intricate tactics that you can use.
I would like to see some agreements with the Chamber of Commerce, too, to self-govern, you know, the businesses around here to help each other make sure their properties are up. I mean, it benefits everybody.
Yeah.
So I can see involving them in some things also, you know.
I think a real focus on the physical environment is just as important as regulating the use. And in many cases, you've heard us talk about this before, regardless of what's inside the building, if the structure's built properly, it fits into the landscape properly, what do we care what's inside? The benefit to the community is how it's placed in the physical environment. Uses come and go. And so if we think about a framework or a form-based plan, we're going to be better off, and you're not going to need so much staff to enforce it because it's self-regulating.
The Bi-Mart building is going to be there 50 years down the road. It might not be Bi-Mart, but the building will be there.
Sure.
So if that gives you an idea of what might be coming to you when you start reviewing county apps, what might be coming in front of you for when we start laying out the zoning ordinance, and you might want to think about what citizens have talked to you about during the public process of what's important to them, because we'll craft that into law. And those are the kinds of things that will make your zoning ordinance different than another city's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I don't want myself. Yeah, it's cookie cutter.
We are very, very unique. We're going to face a lot of challenges. We have a very large city limits, and yet people say, well, you know, they want to be able to walk all around. Well,
So we could develop a city that you can walk all throughout the city. It might take you a week. But, you know, so I mean, we're going to have a balance. There's going to be a balance somewhere in between. You know, Lapine is known for large area. It's a large area. You know, Bend, I have a larger truck, and I cannot find a parking spot in Bend. Now, I was raised at Bend, was wide open spaces of Central Oregon. However, I'm changing my mind about it. I have to come to Lapine to get my wide open spaces. So, see, you know, do we want to become like Bend and have all the neat things, you know? And so some of our challenges are going to be to take all the good stuff that everybody's doing, adopt those, throw away all the bad, and like Lori said, let's develop a common sense town to where, you know, we have a balance and we don't go either way too much.
The challenge is that I agree with everything you just said 100%, but there's, just like there was with the comp plan, with the zoning code, there's going to, when you get into subdivision ordinances, there's flexibility in there. For example, do you want to require trails in the subdivision so you can have the walkability?
Yeah.
A lot of that is based upon state law.
Yeah, I think so.
Of what does the state require you to do and how do you get that?
Trails, bike trails, you know, quad trail through
it. Well, my boss used to tell me, don't tell me I can't do it, tell me how I can do it. That's my attitude about the whole thing. I know there's rules and I know there's laws, but if we feel strongly about something, there's got to be some way that we can get it the way we want.
And you integrate it with the larger economic development concepts. For example, Leakey gets a lead that Intel wants to have a segment of their operation in Lapine. But Intel won't come to Lapine unless they know there's workforce housing, that there are housing choices, good schools, and the things that they want for their employees.
Right.
Can this zoning ordinance, through the imposition of rules and laws, create a nice package so Liggy's got something to work with? And that's an important feature, too.
And it's important, I think, to be, you don't want to present obstacles, but it's important to be tough with development standards. When I look at that subdivision, and I think back when I reviewed, first subdivision I ever reviewed back in Bend in the early mid-90s, there were no parks in the middle of the subdivisions. There were no tree preservation.
Right.
There was a cut and pay and build your street mentality because it was cheap to do the development. And the developers, they would sell the lots. Then what happened is it got stronger, required parks, required trails, required tree preservation. And there was resistance. But then over time, what happened is the developers realized, gee, people really like to live where there's trees and there's parks and there's trails. And you know what?
Right.
These lots I'm selling for about five times what I sold the old lots for, and my construction cost is only about 20% more. It's funny how
we are definitely moving into a recreational tourism area and more of a bedroom community for Ben. And so that's what we're working with, and that, you know, there'll be people in Lapine that I've been here for 20 years, but hey, it's just too bad, so sad, you know.
But that's the thing, I mean, if you don't want parks, you don't need to have them. But it's that local choice. Those are the things that aren't mandated by the state law. That's where you will get a lot of
the parks.
Well, I just want to make sure that I have a common sense answer for anybody that has an objection. There's a reason why we're doing it, you know.
Yep.
Because for so long we were just basically at the mercy of the county as to them making decisions. Now we're making those decisions, but I want to make sure when we make those decisions, we have a reason, a common sense reason for doing so.
And one thing that we can use is that there's examples where that particular development did not work, and so we don't want to go down that road. And
you'll have different levels of analysis, and we'll have to prioritize what are the most important things. Some cities like Davis, California, focus on pedestrian and bikes. Our climate's not conducive to that 12 months out of the year.
Right.
So we make some shifts to make sure that we have a full range of choices, right. But you may be slanted to something else.
You know, turn that bike trail into a snowmobile track.
In Lapine versus, say, Bend, there was a push back in rewriting the subdivision code in Bend back in the late 90s. There was a push for skinny streets. Mm. Well, you know, when I think of that, and I was in charge of that project working under Deborah, was I put myself, I'm a big truck too. You know, mm-hmm. I can't make the turn.
Mm-hmm.
And then, where does the snow go in the winter?
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, you know, and there was a push by the community wanting skinny streets, and the fire department saying it's not safe, we don't have access to the homes.
Mm-hmm. Now they're all one way, right?
It was, you know, that was a huge debate. It took 6 months on that one issue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we almost got lynched because there was a segment of the public saying, you've got to have skinny streets. It's the trend. It's a fad. We want it. We think it's going to make people get out of their cars. That's not our culture here. Mm-hmm. And you know, in a private community like a Broken Top or something else, you can control that because it's private. But when it comes down to the public, you've got to think about emergency services, kids, what happens in that street, because you also put your utilities under the street. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a wide enough width, where are they going to go?
Mm-hmm.
So it's all.
See, I go to Prineville, and I love Prineville Street.
Oh, they're
See,
huge.
But
I love it.
There's a lot of people.
I think that.
There's no right. The one thing I will tell you is I don't believe there's any right or wrong. There's better or worse for you.
I'm just saying when I've gone there and you have to drive there, I actually like their street. Mm-hmm. And I like their parking. And okay, but I'm not leaving Lapine. I'm sorry.
That's what
I know. My husband can't take the Juniper.
When I first started working for Pineville, they still had wooden water lines.
What?
Yes, it was very common in this area. Pacific Power had put in wooden water lines years and years ago, wrapped with cable.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as they're wet, they work.
Yeah, they
not the smartest thing in the world. So, you know, there's a lot of improvements that occur.
Well, and that's one of the things, like the, you know, technology for overhead. You know, a lot of people talk about the overhead utilities and stuff. And I understand the costs and everything. That's a big issue. But down the road, you know, technically it may be more feasible, you know, and that's something to be looked at because it is, you know, it's much more attractive.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, the cost is prohibitive, so, you know.
And that's all we had for you tonight. Just
I think it's very interesting.
Of how you will approach it when it comes forward.
You'll have a lot of fun as we get into the code development.
Oh, yeah.
Do county overlays ever get changed or taken out? Say it's wildlife management or beautification or...
Like the landscape management zone and the wildlife area combined zone. Yes, they can, because once you're inside a city, a lot of the wildlife area combined zone, mm-hmm. which is where the deer migration corridor down here, is the county implemented that under state requirement to look at Goal 5, which is natural resources, and wildlife is a natural resource. So before you had city limits, those things really apply in the rural, what they call the rural parts of the county.
Right.
There's an opportunity within city limits that the state, whether it's Department of Fish and Wildlife or DLCD, mm-hmm. takes a less stringent standard. They're like, okay, we're forcing all this density into the cities. We can't require you to have provisions mm-hmm. for wildlife, too. Now, you can locally do that in terms of, for example, like the...
You put up more signs.
A wider path here, because we're
right.
this
yeah,
is where there's a lot
that.
Of crossings
right.
into an open space.
Mm-hmm.
You can do things like that, but yes, is the short answer. Okay. You can make changes.
I thought maybe they were stuck because that was before city and county. And
that's
pretty much all changeable as long as you're meeting state law.
Okay.
Is that specific?
Good.
In regards to what we're talking about?
Then you're required to build density.
Is it specific to what we're talking about?
If you're going to get rid of stuff like that, then you're going to put more people.
You want to
that's the tree off the state tells you.
Well, if it's something... We're talking about.
Go ahead.
She has a question.
Wendy Corn with the Newberry Eagle. You guys, I can see in your eyes how much you're going to be doing. It's going to be a lot of work. But I've only lived in Lapine for a couple months, mm-hmm. and I've already noticed that we're going to have to take into account temperature and climate. I know you said seasonal, but
mm-hmm.
even like certain trails will have snow one day, and then, you know, you go another street over and it's clear because of just the way the trees
right.
are shading
sun,
everything.
Tree and it's, shade. And
like it's driving me nuts because I'm trying to ride my bike and I don't know where to go. And I might really, you know, hurt myself on, you know, ice or something.
Yeah.
I don't realize it, but I just wanted to bring that up, that our climate is very specific to this area.
Definitely.
It's not like Bend at all.
Definitely. We are a lot more snow. We're 500-600 feet higher than Bend. It's a lot more snow than Bend, yeah. Exactly. That was the point before, is that we may adopt some things that Bend just excels on and is wonderful and we love it and fine, but we're not Bend. We're different, a whole different geography. So, very good point. Thank you. Okay, moving on to agenda item number 8. Update on filling the vacant planning commissioner's seat. Who's got that update? Do we have an update?
Yeah, I think probably I know there was an advertisement.
Yeah.
Oh,
uh-huh.
Patty.
Have we received any applications, do you know?
Not yet.
Okay.
But it has been advertised in the White Spies in the front there, and I think it'll be in the April edition of the Eagle. So we'll keep you guys apprised, though, of what's going on.
Maybe
do
the,
we have any people
maybe
that
the Newbury Eagle could put a little ad in.
Make it big.
that this awesome no. job of planning commissioner
awesome.
Is open. And so don't everybody jump at once.
But there needs to be someone from
in the
city limits.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's
mm-hmm.
very important. In the city limits. And they're huge, though.
City limits.
Huge city limits. So.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it. Just all of us put the word out. Dawn, and you probably got a friend or fellow that would like to be on the planning commissioner.
Ex-friend.
Oh, because you already approached them, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, moving on to item number 9. Update and discussion on Transportation Advisory Committee and our next steps.
Have we received any applications?
We received one.
Okay.
For the transportation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we've got ads running for that too.
And
at last Wednesday's City Council meeting, they did approve the Transportation Systems Committee, mm-hmm. the resolution, whatever they needed to pass, did pass.
Don, do you remember if the that was compiled of was it 7 members? I can't remember.
5. 3, 1 from each.
Did you folks discuss at the council level the 5 members? Were you all right with where they were going to come from? You didn't have specific names, but you did know basically what it'd be compiled of, right?
I'm trying to think. One of the, I know that one of the committees, the people serving on the committee have to be registered voters in the city of Lapine. And I believe that the Planning Commission, I'm not positive, I'd have to go back and look at my notes, but I believe that in the Planning Commission, you can have some people that are not residents of Lapine. Patty, is that
2 or 3?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One from each neighborhood. That was
right.
In the city.
So it's 1 from each neighborhood, 1 from the Planning Commission, and 1 from the Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
And
so
then there were some non-voting members, too.
Mm-hmm.
Ex officio.
So do we know where
so
the person is from? Are they from the Chamber?
Just kidding. No, this is, I believe, a city resident.
Well, I can't
from
believe that.
From one of the 3 neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. People that are business owners that have been wanting to serve
aren't jumping on this.
Aren't. No, but they don't have to be. If they have to be a chamber member.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So
they would have to be from the chamber.
Transportation Advisory Committee.
Mm-hmm.
That we're just trying to form.
And the person on the Planning Commission does not have to be within the city. No, I meant, we were wondering if you might want
to. Oh, I know, you guys already nominated
me.
We decided we would be nice and wait till we come back to nominate you.
To see if you were interested.
I was nominated.
We didn't want to assume.
I knew that would happen, that's why I tried.
But we were basing it on your schedule.
Yeah, that's a possibility. Everything's possible. It is possible. But I wanted to see the planning commission person.
Easier.
What would be really awesome is to find a new planning commissioner that had ties with transportation at some. In some way.
It might be too much
to wish for, but that's our goal right there, is to have that person be interested in transportation also. The old TAG may not have people that live within the city limits of those three neighborhoods. There's some awesome people in that committee, but we were discussing how that almost needs to stay on that county level, in that Lapine is the people that call Lapine homes, actually the majority of those people do not live within the city limits. So that TAG is going to be very important on that county level. The city transportation is going to have close ties with TAG. Very close ties to TAG, however, be within the city. So it's just a brief rundown of what type of person we're looking for. So hopefully that person will step forward and just continue discussion amongst ourselves and in the public.
There was nothing set up on the application. It's just open until you get enough applicants.
We're going to run until we have enough applicants.
You know, we're geographically specific in those three neighborhoods. We might be able to handle the chamber. We can talk to Dan Barco and everything and get that ball rolling. We definitely have to handle our own planning commission. But those three neighborhoods then, the other three, we might look at some creative ways. It's a couple of flyers in those neighborhoods or something. Do they have neighborhood watch or any type of neighborhood meetings in those areas?
Yes. Well, one thing that would generate some excitement is to advertise for the naming of the neighborhoods and get some ownership of those neighborhoods. And we've called them neighborhoods 1, 2, and 3 because there wasn't anything else.
Yeah.
But you could generate some real excitement about, okay, I live in neighborhood, the Evergreen neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Or the Central Park neighborhood, or something else, and you may find that people start getting excited about their neighborhood, and then they'll want to participate on committees.
Now that's just within Crescent Creek. I mean, it's already, but like within the neighborhoods, it could be a couple of two or three streets or something within Crescent Creek.
And the grant has us available to do that kind of work. We looked at that grant. And there is some money available for the city to use to establish that kind of thing if that's important. Mm-hmm. But that's just a thought. So, you can forward that to the council.
I was
going to
say that direction would come from the council, right?
That's right.
Okay.
Is Crescent Creek one place where you definitely need someone?
Yes.
That's the northern.
I might have somebody. I'll check into it.
Okay. Are they interested in transportation?
I'm already on one of those.
Okay.
Well, another thing is, too, there is going to be a town hall meeting on April 10th, and that might be a good time to bring that up, that they're looking for representation. Make an issue of that.
That's something we need to, if we're going to be attending, that we need to put a notice in the paper about a possible quorum. Not that we're participating, but how does that work?
Yeah.
It might be well at the town hall meeting to have that map up on the wall and say, if you live in this section, if you live in this section, if you live in that section. Because I'm sure there are people in this town that don't know what section of town they live in. They just know that they live in the pine. So if you have a definite geographical location, we want someone living in this location that might help.
That might be a good kickoff for that, for naming the neighborhood and all that. So.
Do we have any residences living in number two?
That's Crescent Creek.
Yep, right.
Well, I mean, you got one, two, and three. Point out, Jane, one, two, and three.
Right, yeah, well, here's basically neighborhood one up here. Gable, so you have this area in here. Mm-hmm. And in two, it's somewhat limited because it's in the newer subdivision right here.
Right.
And then as you come to the south, you have some areas on the west and then over
but there,
on the east.
Yeah, but
there's... So between all of us, we ought to be able to know of someone within those three.
Over here.
Yeah, there's somebody at school. Mm-hmm.
There's many residences in one. Right here in
three,
but... John had an idea on two. Go ahead, Don.
If you read that comprehensive plan and you see how many committees and commissions and everything that we've got listed in that plan, you're going to have everybody, man, woman, and child, who lives in this town on one of these committees.
That
would be just awesome. That many. I mean, it's
that would be awesome.
If we could do it. But let's face it, it's not going to happen. We're going to have people serving on one, two, three, four committees.
At the beginning. Mm-hmm.
So it's, and you know, that's an awful lot to ask of a person perhaps that's working in Bend to make a living and living here and driving back and forth, plus all the meetings you have to go to, too.
Mm-hmm.
And even with me, I'm going to four meetings this week.
Wow.
It is.
And you're washing dishes Friday morning.
Jim eats.
I'm not complaining because I volunteered for it, but I mean, the average person might not have that much time if they're working.
That's what the challenge is at all times of volunteerism is that only 10% of your people do 100% of the work. With city work, it's especially the pine, it's mostly volunteerism. But it isn't impossible. And I think that the pine has a large pool of volunteers as they've exhibited historically. So I'm optimistic that once we get the word out and people know and have heard some positive comments, that we'll welcome them in.
So would we like to request that the neighborhood announcement and this announcement be put on the agenda for the 10th? And who do we send that request to, Patty?
Yeah, you can send it to me. That's fine. I'll get it to you.
I think that's a good idea. I really do.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Alrighty then. Number 10. Planning Commission reports and staff updates. Any Planning Commission reports, first of all?
Well, basically, I just wanted to say that Deborah and James received the contract for the ordinances.
Thank you very much.
I'm very happy to be working with them.
Yep.
So, that's about it for me.
It's going to be an awesome year. A lot of things are going to be done in the pine. Look forward to it. Alrighty, and staff update.
Oh,
go ahead.
Just one more.
One more?
Since we were talking about the way we would like the pine to look, for example, my mother moved into the Little Deschutes Lodge, and they are, it may be an example of what we would like to see, and we might look at that. They specifically wanted plants that were native, would not use a lot of water, but would add to the decor. I noticed that they just got done planting a lot of manzanita, things like that, that are natural to our area. So that might be something we can consider, look at. Mm-hmm. But excellent. That's just an idea.
I believe the Forest Service has a pamphlet that's already written, very nice, glossy.
Yep.
We can get stacks of them and they have them available at City Hall.
I think that would be great.
Cool. Start this ball rolling.
In staff reports, if I could make a suggestion, because the grant requires $2,000 of city money to be used for graphics and supplies, it would make sense to me to use a small amount of that money to seek and excite the neighborhoods to bring volunteers from within. So naming your neighborhood contest, having some graphics that can be posters throughout the community to get people energized about where they live and what they want to see the community emerge into. Use some of that money. Make a proposal to the city council. The money is set aside for that. And it has to be a motion amongst yourselves to set that forward. Set an amount and see what you can do with that. That's just a suggestion from staff. But you can't just say, we're going to talk about it at the town hall meeting. You're going to have a poster ready. And this is exciting, and we need you. And set aside some money to do that. It's there. Portion of that is
$2,000 is the maximum.
Yeah, well, that's for the whole grant project. Public outreach and noticing and stuff like that. But if you were to take a couple hundred dollars out,
you got any idea how much money we should ask for?
I don't think you need more than a couple $100.
Is that money specific for that purpose?
It's specific for public outreach, public notice, graphics, and mapping.
Great.
See, and that gets people then. It's, as you said, the ball rolling to then start coming to the public meetings on the zoning or the implementing codes and coming to the hearings. And so.
Nice.
And what is the actual grant title?
Implementing ordinances.
So if we made a proposal, we would ask for $200 from that to be used to promote
volunteerism from one volunteer from each of the neighborhoods to come forward and work on not only the transportation committee, but to be active through the implementation ordinance process. And that's fine. You might have a poster about this size that you can post throughout the community, easy to design, something flashy. Mm-hmm. It's not hard to do. Mm-hmm. And we would help with that because that's part of the grant. And it's not, it's just something that will get people excited.
Excellent.
Name your neighborhood. I think that's a cool thing.
Yeah, that's true.
And then you guys are the judge of, you get five people saying it should be named this. You guys get to choose.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Wendy.
I wasn't here when you guys renamed the elementary school. How did you guys feel about that?
Yeah. We didn't.
The school district one did. Within the school district, so it wasn't City of La Pine.
How did they do it?
They ran ads in the Frontier and the Newbury Eagle.
Had a place where you could send your proposals, and they.
Yeah, and I don't know who actually came up with the decision, but
people got involved.
Yeah, I think they actually had quite a few entries.
Yeah, they did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is the same thing, a little smaller scale, and it's just for this La Pine the neighborhoods and planning commissioner, but
and that may be suggested throughout one neighborhood.
Yeah, I see that working. That's something that's very exciting. We'll get people involved. Bring them into the process so that it's not just this us against them thing. I mean, if you really look at it, it's why isn't the city doing this? Why isn't the city doing that? You may not want to join the planning commission, but they'll certainly submit a.
Of that area and.
Cool.
They participate.
Pardon?
Yeah, comment.
Oh, yes.
Oh, hi.
Yes, Vicki.
Vicki Jackson, Lindy Court, other than Three Rivers. Naming the neighborhood, are we talking about naming subdivisions or naming the whole
general thing? the whole thing? Mm-hmm. Okay, because first I was thinking maybe your own little neighborhood. I thought, we're talking about subdivision?
No, just the
three black lines. Three major neighborhoods.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then the UGB, I guess, you proposed it to be the same thing as the city limits?
Yes.
Okay, and then I know the sewer boundary pretty much goes with the city limits, but I believe it's a little larger, and they're going to be expanding. So with the UGB you have right now, the city will eventually take over the sewer. So will that affect your proposed UGB now?
Not really. No. It's a good question. And Lapine's in an interesting area where you're surrounded by many more homes than you have inside the city or have inside mm-hmm. the future UGB. The sewer district and the water district need to be serving not only the city limits, but looking out to how they can also serve outside the city limits. That's their choice and decision. But serving inside the city is a high priority.
Mm-hmm.
So you may not have a perfect boundary, but some of those things will be worked out as the districts work with the city.
And ultimately, I mean, right now, the state law prohibits water sewer service outside of urban growth boundaries. The districts were established kind of at the same time, or near the same time as the city limits. So right now, it's not possible really to expand beyond the UGB.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to serve some of the outer areas.
Okay.
Okay. So, do we need to make a motion?
Well,
$200 request or not?
I think we have to do a proposal first, don't we? Mm-hmm. Or do we?
You can direct staff to create the poster. That's not a problem. But in this particular case, I'd like you to involve the city council by proposing a motion to them that you are requesting $200 of the city's portion of the grant.
Yeah.
To do public outreach in this special case. And the reason for that is it's important for the council to understand what you're doing, because at their town hall meeting, you know, this is going to be something that's going to be a key element.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want it to happen, that's the process for requesting the expenditure.
So with you as a staff here, we can just talk about it with you folks and make proposals to you. You'll jump right on it. You don't even need anything in writing. However, when we go to the city council, they have requested that any recommendations that come from the planning commission be in writing.
Oh, that's fine.
So
we need to do it in the form of a motion, right?
And then we would make a motion, and then Patty, our secretary, would develop the letter, and then it would go to the next, you know, be on the next agenda.
If you'd like, I can go ahead and do the letter and then just submit it for, I know that's asking a lot for Patty, so.
Did you also want to make a motion that the money issue go to the council? I mean, that does, you know, that needs to be a motion.
Okay. So I would like to make a motion that we request from the city council $200 from the implementing ordinances fund that is part of the grant to be used to supply graphics for advertisement purposes to have a competition?
A naming of
the three neighborhoods in the Lapine area.
And the
citizen involvement.
The posters will be done by the staff.
Yes, that will be performed by the staff. So do
just
I hear
so
a
the
second?
Council
I'll second it.
Second. Okay. All those on the question. I would just add in that the council is aware that our planning staff will be developing that.
Gloria will write the letter.
I'll write a letter and submit it to us to make sure that that's, you know, what we want.
Sure, yeah,
and then to Deborah and James, and then we'll
continue. I'll let you know that we have another meeting next Wednesday in the city council meeting 24.
That's a special meeting, right?
No, that's going to be the regular second meeting of the month.
Okay.
Then on the 26th, we're having a special meeting. After that, we don't have another city council meeting, I think, until April 14th. So I'm just wondering if...
Except for the
guys.
Pardon? Except for the meeting on the 10th? Or is that the April 10th?
Mm-hmm. April 10th is a Saturday special town hall meeting.
Right. But we would like to present.
What meeting?
So you only have really the 26th. You only have next Wednesday night's meeting.
Is that the most logical time that you think to present it to council?
The 24th?
The 24th, I'm sorry.
Okay, but now to get it on the agenda, what's our deadline?
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I've got the agenda from Jeremy. We're just firming up a few things, but it could always be an added agenda item.
Okay, I think we'll go for that.
It's that small.
As long as you can give us the material by Wednesday night.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Do we have a... Oh, sorry.
Oh, that's all right.
Go.
We have a motion and a second on the question. If there are questions, roll call vote.
Commissioner Klassen, aye.
Commissioner John Thomas, aye.
Commissioner Gloria Fonte, aye.
Commissioner Linda Magert, aye.
It is unanimous. And it's done. Thank you, Gloria, for it. Hello.
Generally, it's just a doodle, but it has the basic outline. Contest. Name your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Little graphic of a neighborhood. Bright, friendly colors.
Mm-hmm.
A description of what's needed, where you send your name, and when it'll be considered.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Info on where they live.
Yeah.
One, two, three,
four. And what about when you have... date?
Yep.
And who's going to decide?
Yep. It'll be determined at future planning commission meeting. We'll put a date on there.
Cool.
And so your request gets the council to free up the funds to initiate the contest, which will encourage volunteerism from the three neighborhoods.
Awesome.
Okay.
And we will make the decision, or does the city council make the decision?
I think you're the planning commission. It makes sense for you to make the decision. If the council thinks differently, they'll let you know.
Okay.
I would throw out that they would do the recommendation, but it would be neat to have, adopt a resolution by the council.
Even
that
better.
Here's, it's a formality.
That's great.
Very formal. It's kind of a neat thing. We recognize via resolution. It's not an ordinance law that
this
is the name. You guys make the you're the judges and the council.
Sure.
Okay.
Cool.
It makes it honorary. That's nice.
Yep. Kind of a neat thing.
Very neat. Good practice. Okay. We have no other on the other matters under agenda item number 11. We had none. The next one is very important to me, and it is public comments for items not on the agenda. I always encourage as many as the public to attend these. So everybody that's here has to be here next month and also bring a friend. And everybody has to have a comment. So you can pre-write it before you get here, but we need to have as much comments as we like. So, Don, you want to start them on?
I don't mind at all. First of all, probably your pickup and somebody else's pickup is always the ones that park right next to my sedan parking spots. And I hope that when you design the parking for this community, you make arrangements that the parking spaces are big enough to accommodate your pickups as well as somebody else on the other side of me, and I can still get out of my parking place. That's number one.
Awesome.
I don't know if any of you have been out through Crescent Creek, but I live in Crescent Creek.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got paths around the outside of Crescent Creek. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, some of them aren't very well maintained as far as the brush on the side and everything. In fact, on our place, we have an extra large lot on the corner, and we just hauled out four big trailer loads of garbage out of them. By garbage, I mean cut up logs and stuff like that that's just been laying to rot, and made our place look tremendously better in our opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And we need somehow or another to make certain when they put in these walkways and everything that they are maintained.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's up to the homeowners association.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a comment. And another thing I noticed is that some of the houses in Crescent Creek are so close together you can spit on them, literally. I mean, so they're, we need to make sure when they have these subdivisions laid out that there's a little bit of space in between these homes. I'm like you. I want a big, wide, open place. I don't want to be right up against somebody. And I think that needs to be part of the planning that comes, and it'll come from you, the planning commission. And hopefully, I'm not alone. I think there's quite a few of us in this town that feel the same way. But basically, sitting here listening to what's going on, I think you're doing an excellent job, and we really want to thank you for all that you do. And I can speak for one counselor, and that's if you present this next Wednesday night, there'll be one yay, and that's mine. We'll see what happens from there.
Thank you, Don. Let me make a couple of comments about you. Like you said, thank you very much for your comments. Very positive. You know, one thing that does work, Alaska does it. Some other people do it. In breakup in Alaska in May, everything is free. The city offers the dump is wide open. They have contests and everything. That entire city of Anchorage in one weekend completely cleans up. Now granted, all winter long, there's 3 feet of snow, and so you take your old used battery and you throw it right in the snow and it disappears. And it's gone. Until May. And it's great. And Lapine's kind of similar to that. But what they do, they get involved on a city-wide scale, and they call it the breakup celebration. And I mean, there's parties and stuff for everybody, and that whole city, literally, in a couple of days, is cleaned up. Boom.
Well, they do that here. They did it last year. The Parks and Rec put that on in the Pine Cleanup Day. My husband and I were involved.
Yep.
And maybe that needs to be on a bigger scale. And maybe it was the Parks and Rec, but if the chamber, if the parks, if the city, if everybody got involved, it would probably be a lot more successful.
Exactly. So, you know, the dump or the transfer station up here, you know, they offer that free, you know, collection and all that stuff. And we could coincide with all that. And like you say, just get more people involved. It wouldn't take too many more and do a big cleanup day like that. Just stuff like that is things where we can really have fun with it and make a party out of it. I mean, if you make a party out of it, people will jump in. But if you make it a drudgery and it's something negative, then no one wants to be involved and all that. That's awesome comments, Don. Thank you very much for your participation, your volunteerism in the council. Okay, Wendy, your turn.
Wendy Korn, and I like to ride my bike around. And I noticed that if we have some sort of street sweeping machine, it doesn't move the lava rocks to the side of the street. It's still in the bike lane. And I feel it is so unsafe because of that lava rock. It's really slippery. Every time I turn, I have to like practically stop and make a turn. And you know, I'm just fear for my life. So
it's not time yet. Yeah, they will do it.
Really?
It's just that right now they're still bringing the rocks up because they don't know if it's going to snow. So once that's done, then they go and they get it off.
They could even, you know, a couple of weeks from now, it could literally snow 16 inches in a couple of days. Then they'll spread more rocks out.
So they don't do it now.
They kind of this false spring thing, and then now it's winter again. And
training works.
Right around July 4th, but not guaranteed.
You'll
be able to ride your bike.
July 4th, once we have a snowstorm.
Boring
in the park because
it never is. Every year is different.
I love it here. I think that we should have a new saying that we provide free views. Because I could just, you know, go outside and look at mountains and feel better. I come from Austin and it's flat. You have to look at the sky and it's not the best. So we really need to consider
heights of buildings with planning and you know, billboards, because if I look over at Paulina, I don't want to be staring at a billboard on the looking at Paulina.
So yep, very good.
That's where I'm coming from.
Cool, thank you.
That's it.
Ricky?
Oh, a couple things. Since you made your last, I guess, text changes, the last changes you made, we went on the web and printed it, but is the last changes you made going to be on the web somewhere so the public can see what the new...
Yeah, they should be.
Okay, they should be? Okay. And then I went to the Deschutes County Planning Commission, and the Community Development had their work plan, and I don't know, they have two code enforcement people that work. Yeah, and you know, they kind of went over this because it's pretty much complaint driven, where it'd be nice, especially, you know, if eventually the city of Lapine takes over. I mean, do you have any timetable for when the Lapine Planning Commission will be taking over what the county's doing right now?
The new code that we would develop?
Yeah, or even be looking at land, you know, permits and all that.
it's a great question.
Just an idea.
The city will ease into its jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. The first thing is to create the codes that you're comfortable with, and then the council will adopt those. And then there's a device called the Urban Area Management Agreement, mm-hmm. which talks about the rules between the city and the county. And then after the zoning ordinance is adopted by council, the city and the county will determine how that transition occurs. It may be fast, it may be slow, because the city doesn't have a lot of money to have support staff to do that work, but it'll be a joint decision, and after the zoning ordinances are adopted, most likely.
Okay.
Which would be like budget cycle of July 1st, probably 2011 to June 30th of 2012, so you're still a year out.
Yeah.
You know, on that note, because of the information the Planning Commission requested 2 months ago, and got to the fees that were available, the number of permits, I got a follow-up phone call yesterday from Nick Lelak, who's the planning director for the county, talking to me about the fact that as part of the work that Deborah and I will do for you in developing the implementing ordinances, is how will that transition occur?
Right.
And again, this is just a conversation. Is I think as the council, what we talked about is it would be appropriate for him at some time, maybe in May, a couple months down the road, that as the council begins deliberations and discussions on the budget, the city budget for 2010, 2011, to start those discussions now as to how the transition would take place, so that the council could think about it a little bit as part of this budget cycle, knowing that it's really going to come to fruition the next year.
Right.
Well, thank
so
goodness we
did. They're administering the code, but to be very frank, because we had this discussion on behalf of the city last year with the county, and they're not doing code enforcement. They don't see that as part of the urban area management agreement.
Yeah, and I can tell you I get a ton of complaints from people in the city because they do have a lot of issues and the county can't do any code enforcement in the city limits.
So there may be a provision in the decision for Bi-Mart that says maintain your landscaping, but the county does not have anybody to send down for you to enforce it.
And I think, John, you brought up at the council, you guys are getting copies of just the land use decisions, but not the building permit decisions they're making for you in your city?
We do get copies of all the applications.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. Yeah, we'll start. That's one thing we're going to start doing. We're going to get copies of all applications within the city limits. Okay. And so we will see them as just shortly after the county receives them. And not at the same time, but I mean just shortly after.
But then we have to get back to the county if we have any objections.
We have a very short timeline to get back to the county with our feedback, to give all our recommendations to the county. And
that was part of the discussion, though, was that they will get the information to you sooner, like a copy of the application packet, sooner than they would send the typical transmittal notice to all the other agencies that have staff that are able to look at it every day and provide comments, because you don't meet as often. But you would still have to get formal comments back to them by the end of the comment period. Mm-hmm. But that comment period is probably not going to end until about four weeks after the application is submitted. The date of the application, it's processed, it's assigned to a planner, the planner creates the notification list. It may be 2 to 3 weeks before they send out the notice to all the other agencies. Okay. What they're saying is in that first week that they get it, they're going to send it.
Oh, okay.
So maybe also, we may not have much comment on a majority of these applications that are just real simple, someone building a garage over here. Yep. But we may even come to the point of having a special meeting if some large controversial project, comes across our desk. Then we may even hold a special meeting outside of our monthly meeting.
Or one other thing you discussed was, and just to keep in the back of your head, was can you create a subcommittee among yourself of right. two or right. five of you to do the reviews, give comments, and then report back to the rest of the
group. And that is an authorization we would have to get from the city council.
Correct.
One thing, though, we really became aware of that it's not cost effective to have somebody doing the land use, having a planning department at this time. It's way out. We are really so much better off with the county doing it financially at this particular point. Mm-hmm. So
those can be subcontracted out later. Mm-hmm. We're looking at a year to 2 years, probably time frame. And even then, maybe some sort of a subcontracted thing. It depends on the revenue that the city has. Don spends the money wisely and all that. Saves most of the planning commission and all that, then we'll be fine.
Actually, it should
just
be
about to tell you that if you have any budget requirements, you need to get them in right away. Starting on that next week.
Yeah. It's important to think about training, field trips, and any kind of resource materials that you think you might need.
Yes.
For a city of Lapine size, you should think between 5 and 10K. Yeah. Is my estimate based on my experience with smaller communities. That gives you an ability to attend the EPA conference, which
EPA
is important.
Conference, annual conference.
And get some research materials that you can use as a resource.
Okay, so.
Convention.
And this is money that would have to come from the city,
APA.
Not from grants?
APA. Correct.
APA.
Oh, so we need to put that in the
So it, can you give us, like,
a.
I know you just said 5 to 10, but I think if we ask for that amount of money, they're going to want to know specifically.
Sure.
A breakdown? Could you guys
absolutely
do that for us?
Mm-hmm.
And when you said field trips, does that mean on those things we send a representative, or is that
for
something
example,
where we would all be wanting to attend?
Let's say we need to examine something in Redmond that was very well done, mm-hmm. requires the renting of a van, or it requires some other accommodation so that you as a group can go there and meet and examine it, there may be some costs. And so you want to have that available to the Planning Commission. These are normal expenses within an incorporated city to have some training, some flexibility, and a very small budget so that you can respond to citizens' needs. You may need that money just for training to help yourselves out.
Right.
And I put down a League of Oregon Cities. I brought a couple of extra ones we had.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. Because they have some classes listed in there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you want
to. I was going to comment on that too. League of Oregon Cities has a program where they can assist individuals that feel that they need the training, but they really can't afford maybe an overnight stay or something like that. So they have a program. In fact, I've got some applications to apply for it. So maybe we can get some of those, Patty, from the league and have them available so that this commission can see what's available. And then if they see that it's something that they need to go to and the planners don't have the funds available or the city doesn't have to send them, they can get a tuition pays.
Sure,
or something
financial
like
aid.
Excellent.
So do we need a motion to submit something? Would it be to the city council or would it be to the budget committee?
It has to go to city council.
First.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So do we need a motion to do that?
Or can we just instruct them?
General shaking of body parts.
Consensus.
Okay. Should be a formal request, shouldn't it?
Well, until you have it in front of you to review. Mm-hmm.
Right.
You're just asking us to
prepare. So she's preparing it, and we'll look at it at our next meeting.
Probably at the next meeting.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. What is the deadline for the budget stuff to be in?
Well, we have to have it, I think, it has to be in effect in July, and we have to have public comment, I think, two meetings at least 30 days in advance. So it's coming up within the next month or two.
That's what I was thinking.
Something in April or May.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it could be almost finalized.
It could be a request. It could have specific amounts on it, but not be specific as to what the type of training and the location is that is being researched. Something to that effect. But we do need to get it in soon.
Yeah. It's a Planning Commission budget item.
Their training
is part of the budget.
And training, training can help. Just speaking for the council, they may not have to know exactly every little detail that we're going to be training is training. Quite frankly, if they can't trust us to attend legitimate training that later on, I don't know, we're in the wrong business, I guess, because training is training.
And you will know what those are.
Later on, when they come up. The APA conference, that's an annual thing. You folks know of most of your annual type of thing. Mm-hmm. Those could be listed, but if there's if something comes up within a month notice and it's very important, then we should be able to spend our little $150 to go attend.
I was just under the impression that was some money was set aside with one of the grants that you guys had received or that you'd gone after or something that would be providing training for the planning commissioners.
A budget for necessary education and travel, period. It's general.
That's
you want
normal.
It general. You don't want it somewhere you're tied down and say,
right.
I want it to go to this meeting on this date.
Exactly.
And spend that much weight on it.
Exactly.
That's
what I'm going to say. That meeting, you lose that.
Because
the training
you guys are all volunteers for Grand Island.
Right.
I mean, let's face it.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't have the best interest of the city at heart, you wouldn't be down here spending your time now. We've got to trust you.
Amen.
No problem. Personal opinion.
No, right on. The kinds of training that the grant provides is in relationship to the implementing ordinances.
Okay.
So if you needed training for a specific purpose, for example, I'm going to make this up and probably get into trouble, but if there was a class on alternate energy production, something that helped the city become energy neutral so that you're producing as much energy as you use, and that conference was in Portland, and you wanted to send a member because we were dealing with BioGreen and a biomass plant, and it was relevant, $150 plus gas time in a hotel would be worth it for one or two of you to go and then come back with that information.
Right.
That's reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. I
didn't understand.
It would be a line item, essentially, in the city council budget among all the other line items.
One other question. For example, we're looking at enforcement of certain ordinances, is that something that we would want to put into a budget?
That's a different
one. I mean, we haven't really projected yet, but I mean, seriously, I could see that happening.
Eventually that will happen.
It will.
Probably not this budget cycle.
I was just going to say that.
That's why I just didn't know. If we should, you said project it to next year. Is that something?
Well, one thing that that gets very complicated, because it's one thing to say we're going to budget to have to pay a person to do the code enforcement, but then once you issue the warning or the cease and desist, and then you get into the citation, then you get into, you have to go to court to deal. Mm-hmm. How far does it go? And there's a lot of cost associated with that. So there's multiple line items there that it may run into. So again, I think I would suggest to you is that again, because I talked to Nick yesterday, and Deborah and I both done it, but it would be good to hear what he sees as dollars that were available at the county for La Pine, the things done in La Pine, how they've spent those dollars, kind of a projection of how he sees a transition. Have him come speak to you at your planning commission meeting and the council as they get into this year's budget deliberation. He thought that was great. He was more than willing to do that as soon as you wanted to have him.
Excellent. Let's get it on the agenda.
Okay. Is that something you guys would want for the April or meeting or no? At this point,
to have a guest appearance from Nick.
It would that be sounds like a good idea. Training.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I think your next meeting is April 21st.
Yeah, that's plenty of us. That's a month. Yeah.
That's my birthday month, so I'm not sure if I can attend.
You're
definitely
going to
attend.
This is my birthday year.
Kirk is on April 26th, and it's a significant birthday for her.
Yeah.
Oh.
Welcome to the club.
I think
it's
25
times.
It's
your
birthday, too.
Yeah, it's my birthday, too.
Is it really?
April 26th.
Go Taurus. That's a good thing.
Is it
wait, Jacob's birthday too?
Yes. So,
did we get over it?
You'll have a guest appearance from Nick Wheelock, and then you'll have to organize that with him to have
it. Next month.
Okay.
Plenty of time. In April?
Yeah.
So, in April, we'll try to get, you know, just warn the council that.
Mm-hmm. No, he brought it up. I never even thought of it. Thank you.
the planning commission budget is coming. It's going to be huge.
All right.
And
I thought we were doing the budget chairman here next week.
I haven't talked to Ken about that. He's only been in line so far. He's just starting to warm it up.
Do we adjourn this meeting?
I'll sure make a motion to adjourn.
I'll second it.
Motion made and seconded. If there are no questions or further comments, this meeting is adjourned at 7:50.